Hello, Bashar.
And to you, good day.
Thank you so much for this conversation, friend. I'm really excited.
It is our passion and our pleasure. Please proceed.
First, I would like to know how many more Sasani friends are listening to this right now?
At this particular moment, somewhere between 20 and 30 million.
Oh, wow. Can I say hi from the earth? And I love the Sasani family.
Well, you just did.
Awesome. Bashar, I would like to ask about, I recently heard you said in a transmission from some years ago, you were describing the process when you were born on your world.
Yeah.
And how you were joined telepathically immediately by everyone and shared and welcomed to the world, right?
Yes, yes.
So I would like to know if it's the same process for the hybrid children when they are born.
It hasn't been the same process, but in the future, ultimately, it will be. They are a little bit more physically oriented so that they can relate to your reality and you can relate to them. So for now, they don't exactly experience birth in the way that we do. They experience it a little bit more closely to the way you do, although, of course, there are major differences in that they are genetically produced and nurtured and brought into maturation in a different way. But ultimately, living among you, they will reproduce pretty much the way you reproduce and will continue to reproduce for many, many years to come.
Okay. And so when do they develop their telepathy? As I understand, they're very telepathic.
They are already developing their telepathy as they are educated in a variety of endeavors. Their telepathy is part of them and, in a sense, genetically bred into them.
Okay. Wow, that is wonderful. So expanding on that idea, I was interested in understanding the telepathic link that the children have with their parents.
Yeah.
And how imagination plays a role in this, because I experience a lot of synchronicity with my children.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Yeah, sometimes I play games. I bake cookies for them and I pretend like I'm having an imaginary friend.
Yes, you are helping to give them examples of how things are done on Earth. You are helping as part of the training program so that they can understand how humans on Earth go about doing things in your society. That's part of the program.
Okay, so when I pretend that I'm there with me, sometimes I notice that new energy kind of comes into my imagination and I can tell that I'm being joined by new children.
Yes. They're paying attention. It's like they're joining the class.
Okay. Wow. So that was another question that I have. So how could we as parents, as human parents, help them with their development? So keep doing those things.
Yes. Show them how things are done.
So whatever they are excited in the moment, right?
Yes, 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 yes.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. So another question I have is I've been practicing your lucid dream exercises, and I have become way more lucid during the dream.
All right.
And also in my life.
Yes.
And lately I've been able to have conversations with some beings during the dream time.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you. And one thing that I asked a few times, where am I? And they said, you are on a city ship.
Yes.
And so I wanted to ask you if that's the same as a mothership and if you could describe.
Yes, basically. It's just a matter of size. It's just a matter of degree. City ships can be motherships. Motherships can be city ships. Sometimes the city ships might be larger than motherships. It just depends, again, on the size, the purpose, how many people are on board at any given moment. So it's just a matter of degree.
Okay. And how do they have pilots specifically for the city ships?
Yes, again, like all our ships, all the way down to the scout ship, up to the mother and city ships, there is usually one or a few beings that are telepathically connected, because remember, our ships are grown. They are physical, crystallized representations of our own higher minds, and therefore the city ships can actually be representative of a collective as well. And therefore, a few different beings can, in a sense, function as the pilots of those ships because they are telepathically connected to the higher minds that are included in the collective that is represented by the ship.
Okay. And do they travel from one star to the other in the same way that you have described before by changing the location variable?
Yes.
Okay.
If they want a great jump, yes. Otherwise, by traveling more slowly, again, we just simply take advantage of electromagnetic and gravity energy and things like that to travel more slowly. But going from star to star with a quick jump, yes, it's the same technique that we have described in changing the locational variable in the object.
Okay. And do you have to include in that kind of equation all the frequency of all the beings that are within the ship?
Yes, but the ship does that automatically. Because remember, it's the higher mind that contains all of those beings. Therefore, the ship takes care of that equation. It would be too complex for the individuals themselves to have to factor all that in. So the way the ships are designed, the way the consciousness operates, takes care of all of that and includes everyone aboard.
Okay. So thank you for that explanation. So when you mentioned that parents of the children sometimes are taking aboard the ships for just being spending time with the children, does the consciousness of the ship is the one that kind of works with your higher mind to get you on board the ship?
It's connected, yes. There are other techniques going on there too and other engagements and involvements. But yes, it has to include your vibration in order to allow you to be aboard in the way that you need to be.
Okay. And when we join the ships, are we being taken there physically or is like an astral projection that we do?
It can be either.
Okay. I'm very fascinated with this right now because of all the dreams that I have.
Yes, what you remember as dreams can be representative of having been shifted astrally or even physically. It's just that you only remember them as dreams.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Yes, another question that I have was about mathematics.
Yes.
And our scientists say that mathematics can explain the universe.
In a sense, it can explain the underlying structure of your physical reality. Now, again, we don't necessarily use in our reality mathematical notation in the way that your scientists do. We use geometric configurations to represent similar things. So it's a different language, but it basically represents the same idea that existence can, in its underlying form of expression on different levels, be described by different relationships, mathematically or geometrically speaking. Different relationships, different ratios, so on and so forth. You recognize these things in your reality as golden proportions, phi ratios, fractal progressions, and things like that.
Okay, that's the area that I'm most interested about. Yes. Because I'm a designer and I've been studying the pattern creation in nature. And then I was just curious if you could, with our mathematics, if we could understand, for example, I remember you talking about the inside-out universe.
Yes.
That is completely different. So will the mathematics that we understand eventually help us, let's say, represent mathematically that universe? Or that's a
different Yes. universe? Yes, it will. It can. It's capable of doing so in the terms that you need. Yes.
Okay. So is there anything like the mathematics of consciousness?
Yes, and to some degree, that's actually what we're talking about.
Okay.
Because consciousness has to express itself in a certain way to be representative of a certain level of reality. So this is why we say consciousness, as a template underlying physical reality, expresses itself as a tetrahedral structure or a series of them.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know that was an expression of consciousness within our...
Well, everything is an expression of consciousness. It's just that what we're describing now is the way consciousness expresses itself in certain geometric ratios and proportions and relationships, and that translates to an underlying template that expresses itself as tetrahedral structures that are intersecting and embedded with one another in certain ways.
Okay.
Some of your quantum physicists are beginning to understand this. They have recently realized that the underlying template beyond and below subatomic levels is actually a tetrahedral structure that they're beginning to realize is actually an expression of a consciousness field.
Okay. That's fascinating.
Anything else?
Just a few more questions. One is about the let's say job as a first contact specialist. I'm just curious about if that is a division in your planet that many people join, and in general, how many Sesani beings work when you're, let's say you're working with planet Earth right now. So how many beings that have your same, let's say, speciality of being a first contact specialist interact with her so that they can, the project can be, I don't know, like accomplished, if that's a lack of.
At this particular moment, there are 13 first contact specialists from my society that are in some way, shape, or form involved with Earth.
Okay. And that number changes.
It depends.
Okay.
But in my society, again, give or take, there are approximately, right now, approximately 10,000 first contact specialists.
Okay, that is wonderful. And are they all part of the same lineage of your family, or they're different?
No.
They don't have to be. Okay.
No.
Yes, perfect. My last question is about a dream that I had recently.
Yes.
And I would like to see if you can help me understand a bit more. It was with the grays. Lately, I've been feeling very strongly connected to the grays, many dreams with them.
Yeah.
But this one was very lucid, and I was inside a structure. I cannot really explain. I know that my brain was having a hard time with this scenario. But there was a being inside the dream that I could access and talk to. And I asked, who are you? And the being said, I'm not a biological entity. I'm a artificial intelligence consciousness.
Yeah.
And then I saw kind of like a geometric structure of energy and many points of light. And then for each point of light, I saw a gray. And I felt that connection within my own brain. And then a serious being showed up and said, relax, kid, that's the hive mind. And then I woke up and I had a headache for the whole day. But I had the feeling of the grace with me the whole day. So I was like,
that's a relatively rare gift to be given a sense and a connection to the idea of the gray's hive mind. So cherish it. It will serve you in the future.
Okay. Thank you so much, Bashar. That was incredible. I felt like it was a gift, and I really...
It is. And it will serve you well in connecting to other aspects of your own being in the future and integrating these things as you go further into the hybridization agenda with the hybrid children.
Okay. So I was accurate on my intuition with the dream.
Yes.
One really quick idea I wanted to ask you. When you're in the future land in our planet, do you think it would be of your excitement to wear a Hawaiian t-shirt?
No.
Okay. I had a dream that a Sesani being was wearing one, and it was...
That's because you are blending the idea of myself with the channel, because the idea is that the channel is becoming more his version of me. So you're seeing, no pun intended, a hybrid symbol of both of us.
Oh, okay. That's what happens when someone is channeling. It's becoming a third entity in the process of channeling, right?
Yes. So thank you and good day.
Thank you so much, Bashar. Have a great day.
Hello, Bashar. Greetings.
And to you, good day.
I am so honored and happy to have some time with you.
It is our passion and our pleasure to interact with you as well.
Thank you. So I have a few questions and one request. So I'll start with the first. I want to say a statement that when you gave the teachings of the Eye of the Storm, you know, it's everything was very clear and understood, but it wasn't so real. And I must say that this time, right now, it becomes so real with the awakening.
Yes. We told you that 2020 was going to be chaotic and nuts.
It's a wonderful nuts.
Well, it can be if used that way. Yes, that's the opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, I am proud. I have to say, as a statement, I'm proud of every person who's in the street right now.
Yes.
Creating a voice for us. It's a voice.
Yes. So participate in your own way as best you can.
Yes, thank you. So taking to the permission slip of the passing through the eye of the needle.
Yes.
One of the items that you said to focus on was focusing on my future self. I think it's step four to...
Yes. To start being informed by your future self rather than your past self.
Yes. So I feel, I understand the wording. I just don't, I feel like I'm there and available, but it's like the nothingness. It's...
All right. Well, I'll give you a little assistance with that. All right?
Okay.
So imagine a version of you in your mind's eye, in your imagination. See how a version of you in the future would be acting differently than you might be acting now in doing everything that you might do in your life. Watch the differences between how that version of you does things that are more in alignment with your passion, with who you truly prefer to be, rather than the way you might have done them in the past. Observe more carefully, no matter what it is that that future version of you is doing, how that you is doing it differently than the way it might have been done in the past, that's more representative of joy and alignment. And then start mirroring that behavior as closely as you can. You will then form a stronger bond, a resonance, connection with the future self. And that means the future self can give you more information that can guide you forward rather than remembering the way things used to be done, which anchors you to the past self, which then gives you information about how things used to be done rather than the way things can be done. So that's a technique you can use in your imagination to see the future self living her life in the way that would be representative of her joy in everything that she may do, whether it's simple things during the day or bigger things, doesn't matter. But the more you mirror the way she does them, the more you will connect to the future self and receive information from the future self that will pull you forward to become that version of you. Does that help?
It's the beginning of help.
Oh, all right.
When you say that, the reason it's not the complete vision is, it's not that I need to, right there when I do the discipline or... Actually, what I'm referring to, probably I think I'm still getting it. So I'm referring to at the time when I do the discipline. I love doing it every morning. It's give me a nice boost into the
evening. That's up to you.
Yes. So in that place, I'm visioning her, me, or him. It might be him. I don't know.
No. I'm talking about the future self in this life.
That's not understood by me here.
Well, it's understood by you now because I just told you. In other words, years from now, will you be living more in the way that you really prefer to as opposed to the way you're choosing to do things now?
Truthfully, I hope so, but I don't...
Well, all right, let's stop there.
Yes.
You can know so. You don't have to hope so. You can make the choice. But the point is whatever it is that version of you is doing years from now, you can start mimicking her now.
But is she or he?
Are you a she?
I got it. No, I am a she. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I corrected myself.
All right.
When I am so I'm the future me is going to deliver images to me.
Is going to deliver information to you and feelings to you and images and what have you to get you to start resonating more as the future you. To behave more as the future you. To give you the information that would be more representative of being the future self so that you can more quickly become that version of you. But you can use your imagination to get yourself there faster by imagining the way she would be living her life that's different than what you're doing now, and then simply mimicking her in all the things that she's doing. That's the technique you can add to your meditation. Is that making any sense to you at all?
It does. It makes sense.
All right. So we're suggesting a way that you can accelerate the process.
Okay. I think I took it more harder, more...
Yes, it's not that complicated. Don't overthink it.
Yeah. So with that, thank you. With that, I just like a footnote on the other spinning of the wheel exercise, the permissions you gave us. It's kind of the same feeling comes to me is when you give potential timelines, I focus on that. I pick up one and I focus on it, but it doesn't take me any further.
It's just a stretching exercise. It doesn't mean you have to find yourself fully in that reality. It's just a way of stretching your imagination to connect to other probabilities so that you can connect to the probabilities in your timeline that are relevant for you. It's just a stretching exercise. It doesn't mean you have to become a person in that reality.
Yeah, well, it's 15 minutes per scene. It's a long time when you...
You don't have to do them all on the same day.
No, not all. Okay, I got you.
You can do them one a day. You don't have to. You can make up your own scenario of parallel reality, too. Remember, we have always told all of you that when we give you a permission slip, you can allow your imagination to alter in whatever way actually works better for you. You don't have to stick to exactly the way we have outlined it. We're just giving you a seed. You get to water it, and you get to allow it to grow in whatever way, shape, or form you desire.
Yeah, it's a process of freedom.
Yes, it is. And stretching your imagination to make sure that the way you're doing it is what works for you.
Yeah, I love this. Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
Yes, please. Yes. I'm going to read it. A few months ago, I had to put down my dog. She had difficulties with her body.
All right. But of course, her spirit is still with you.
So that's where I'm going. I felt a great agonizing loss with her leaving, and I
understand the grief that you're talking about, but nevertheless, you haven't lost anything.
So and probably we're talking to the conscious, the body mind consciousness here. Of me that I created the garden, I buried her in her garden, and yes. I could feel her, I talk to her.
Yes.
Sometimes I open the door and I feel like she's standing there, wants to come in.
And she may be. But the idea is that of course you will meet her again in spirit, but the idea is that you haven't lost her, she's still with you. You just have to allow yourself to be able to perceive it a little bit more strongly, that's all.
How do I do that?
Well, you stop grieving like you've lost something, because when you imagine that something is lost, you break a connection in energy. If you understand that she's still with you, just in a different form, you'll start feeling her more strongly.
Uh-huh. And does she know? I mean...
Yes, of course. In a sense, she's waiting for you to recognize that she's still there by stop pretending that she's not.
I feel like I'm pretending that she is when I don't see her.
But you're actually pretending that she's not.
Right. Yeah, I got you. I understand that.
All right.
So is she not going to reincarnate into another?
Reincarnation is an idea and an experience you can create, but it doesn't actually exist in the way most people on your planet think it does. Everything exists at the same time. Everything. So how can one thing become another thing if both exist simultaneously?
Yeah, then
you can have that experience. You can create the experience as if you have become something else. But that's not what actually happens mechanically. So yes, the oversoul of the animal may extend itself into other beings. That would feel like a reincarnation. And in that sense, yes, there may be many counterparts of that particular animal that if you encountered them would feel like your dog reborn. But that's just because they exhibit a similar energy because they're part of the same oversoul. It's not that the dog actually became another dog.
Okay.
Because the dog will always, for you, also be in spirit. Now, you may encounter another counterpart that will feel like your dog has reincarnated. That can happen. And therefore, a connection can be made physically too in that way. But at the same time, that doesn't mean you necessarily lose the connection with the spirit version of your dog either, because that has always existed too. So it's up to you as to what to focus on. The physical representation, the spirit representation, or both. You can do both.
Well, how would I mean, I understand, but I'll still ask it because that's how I feel it. How would I change myself not to be so physical? Like, I want to hug her. I want to feel her. I mean, I feel her in my being, but when I don't feel the reality.
Because physical reality is a little denser than spirit, you may have to take a little bit more time to be able to relax in a meditative state to really be able to feel the spirit dog, because it's a more refined version of energy. At the same time, like I said, sometimes in order for people to actually feel the physical sensation, you may attract another counterpart of the same oversoul that you can actually have a physical contact with. So again, you might do both.
I got you. I understand it.
All right. Thank you.
Last thing.
Yes.
I just really asked for a fatherly advice. While entering an intense water fasting detox, right now I started it and I feel the discomfort of pain, yeah, the body in high emotional roller coaster. There are times that the state that I'm in is so unbearable.
Well, if you're truly detoxing, it might simply be the reaction of your body to the fact that you're dumping a lot of toxins into your system all at once. You don't necessarily have to do it that strongly. You can, shall we say, pull back a little bit. You can do it a little bit more simply, a little bit more softly, a little bit more slowly. It's up to you. You don't have to make yourself uncomfortable, but sometimes detoxing will dump a lot of toxins into your system. They will pass. They will get out of your system eventually, but you can slow down a little bit if that's more comfortable for you. All right?
Yeah.
All right.
I thank you so much. I love you so much.
Our unconditional love to you as well. We thank you for the co-creation and bid you good day.
Good day, Bashar.
Hello, Bashar. My name is Keito. I'm from Japan. I have a question. When I do yoga or meditation, I can feel fulfilled and be myself, but it is difficult for me to stay in that. Thank you very much. Bye.
Well, again, please follow the formula as precisely as you can. That will help. At the same time, don't have the insistence or the expectation that the feeling you have from doing the yoga has to be exactly felt the same way when you're doing other things. You may be, in a sense, cutting yourself off by thinking that it's supposed to feel identical when you do something different than what you did before, and that's not the case, because if you are doing something different, the feeling is going to be different. The energy is going to be different in terms of how you experience it, but that doesn't mean it's not at the level it needs to be for what you're doing. So don't make false equivalencies by saying, well, I feel fulfilled when I'm doing the yoga, and I'm supposed to feel exactly the same way when I'm doing something else. No, you need to feel slightly differently when you're doing something else, because there's an appropriate energy to everything you do. And therefore, get used to the idea that even though you may be operating on the perfect level you need to be operating on to do the other things, it's going to feel different. It's not going to feel like you're doing the yoga. The fulfillment will feel a little bit different for the thing you're doing.
Hi, Bashar. I love you. I have a silly common question. Let's say I have a job and I have a decent income, but there is this thing that is my passion, which I know if I follow it, that I will have less of an income. And I follow this passion, I will have much less income. And let's say my house goes on foreclosure and I'm responsible for my wife and children. And I tell them this is a blessing, foreclosure is good, we have to look at it positively. And then later we will be homeless, and I will tell them, okay, this is positive, this is a good thing, but when, at what time do we start questioning?
This is a perfect example of an individual who knows just enough metaphysics to be dangerous to himself. You are starting from a false premise. And the false premise is the idea that you think you know that your income will lower if you are acting on your passion. The actual amount of financial abundance may fluctuate. But if you remember that there are many forms of abundance, such as trading for something, such as being given a gift, such as synchronicity, such as imagination, such as communication, all forms of exchange that can work together to allow you to continue to be able to act on your passion, which would by definition be inclusive of your family if they're part of your excitement, which I assume they are, and will take care of everything that needs to be taken care of that is relevant for you. So don't start from the false premise that your passion can't support you.
Hello, dear Bashar. This is Art from Kanyus. And my question is regarding the timelines. The timeline that I'm envisioning, that I'm truly invested in and putting my energy into, is one where all the civilizations come together here on Earth to function as one family under the stars, really, and where everybody is a little bit brought up to speed so that we also all function as telepaths in a sense that we are accessing the Akashic records too, then having all the answers, as you say, at the right moment, in the right time, the right answers, the right information. So, yes, what is the preferred SSRNI timeline, the one that you're envisioning, that you most probably are putting your energy and time and effort into to realize with us here on Earth?
As we read the collective energy now, it's probably going to take you, for what you're describing, about 300 years of your time to start experiencing in the way that you've described it to some degree. However, different individuals may experience it sooner. Some may experience it later. We're only giving you an average overall bubble of the idea that you're describing as to the most likely, most probable time frame as we read the energy now that may allow such manifestations to be recognized more consciously on your planet as being normal or natural at that time, for such things to start happening more frequently among more people. But it will build. There's a process. You'll experience many different levels of it before you get there.
Iliova, my name is Pat from New Jersey. I have a question for you, and it's regarding Shekinah, the 3 days that you spent moving through the eye of the needle. What were the procedures? Thank you, and have a wonderful day.
There were no procedures. We were in what you might relate to as a telepathic lockdown. We all just went into a meditative zone. Nobody moved. There was nobody doing anything other than tapping into the Shekinah experience at that moment for those 3 days. We emerged as different people. At that time, there were about 250 million of us on the planet.
Hi, Bashar. It's Gabriela from Canada. Can you comment on the belief that an individual is perfect whether they're in alignment or not? And what is your definition of perfection?
What we mean when we say that is simply you are a perfect version of whatever you are at any given moment. It's not that you will be more perfect as you change. You will simply be differently perfect. We use that phrase to indicate that you're not attempting to measure yourself against some unattainable ideal of perfection. You are exactly where you need to be, exactly when you need to be there, even if it's not what you really prefer. But even if it's not, you are still a perfect representation of someone who's experiencing something they don't prefer. So it's simply a way of validating every state of being, even the ones you don't prefer, which then paradoxically actually gives you the opportunity to change into different state of beings you might prefer, because by being perfect for whatever you are at any given moment, you're not invalidating yourself, which prevents you from moving forward and changing in the way you prefer. But that has nothing to do with the idea you humans call perfection. because perfection to many of you means you never change again. But change is a constant. So you will always simply become differently perfect because you're already perfect for whatever you are as the representation you are. It's a perfect representation of whatever you are. That doesn't mean you can't change and become more in alignment with what you prefer to be. But that's not the way most people on your planet think of when they think of perfection. Most people on your planet think of perfection as a static state. That will never happen. You are always going to be dynamically changing.
I have another question. So when we switch between parallel realities, we have a memory of the past. And is that memory of the past of the individual in each parallel reality, or there is a different past that the individual does not remember, or there is a fresh start and the past does not exist?
All of them. Remember, it's not this or that, it's this and that. Everything you've described happens simultaneously, and it just depends on which one you focus on that gives you the experience you're having.
I think defining past would be helpful, and for me, past seems to be more tangible as we have physical objects that are from the past, whereas the future seems like the idea of illusion because there is no tangible physical objects from the future.
First of all, you don't have physical objects from the past. You create them again in the present. Nothing comes from the past. You are creating a continuity illusion, creating an object in the present and saying it comes from the past doesn't mean it actually does. That's just your way of expressing the idea of time and space. And in fact, you actually do have objects from the future. You're just not allowing them to be visible yet until you believe they need to be visible in the present. So an object you're considering to be from the past is also an object from the future if you're creating the continuity that the object is still there in the next moment. That object came from the future.
Hello, Bashar. This is Lorena from Slovenia. I experience in my life a lot of synchronicity, and it's my favorite form of abundance. And related to that, I quite often get insight, a feeling, a vision, what an outcome of certain synchronicity is going to be. But what triggers me is this time-space between my vision and the result of a certain synchronicity. So I would like to know, how can I overcome this most easily? Because otherwise, I experience a lot of impatience. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Again, remember, impatience comes from the belief that you need patience, and believing you need patience comes from the idea that you're supposed to be somewhere better than you are. Be in the moment. There is nothing more important than what's happening in the moment. Use it fully, and you won't need to be patient waiting for something else to happen. And if you're not waiting for something else to happen, then you won't be impatient. It's that simple. You're creating an insistence. You're creating an expectation that there's something more important you should be focused on other than what's happening in your life at any given moment. And there isn't anything more important than what's happening in the moment. When you know that, you won't need patience and you won't be impatient. You'll be fully living and fully experiencing and fully appreciating and fully using whatever is going on right here, right now. Nothing else will take precedence.
Hello, Tadea.
Nania.
We have some questions from our live stream viewers.
All right.
The first one is, what is the importance of fairy tales? Are beliefs considered self-storytelling?
Yes. Beliefs are the stories you tell yourself about yourself. Sometimes, therefore, different kinds of stories outside of your beliefs, fairy tales and other kinds of stories, can help, perhaps, illuminate what some of the stories are that you're telling yourself in your belief system by how you respond to the fairy tale. The fairy tale can be designed to put you in touch with the stories that you're telling yourself to examine whether or not they are the stories you would like to continue to tell yourself or whether you would wish to change the story.
Okay, thank you. The next question is, you've spoken about how cats are shapeshifters, and I was wondering if small dogs also have this ability, or if dogs in general have a different gift or ability.
Well, it's slightly different. Both animals will be able to perceive other kinds of energies that are invisible to most humans. Cats more the idea of peering into other dimensions, but dogs more sensing the energies of the people that they live with to reflect back to them and be of service to them by reflecting those energies so that they can see in the dog reflections of things that may be going on in their own consciousness that they may need to pay attention to or deal with or transform. Animals act in very reflective ways. Therefore, the dog is more oriented to the idea of those internal reflections in the human, and the cats are more oriented to the idea of other dimensions and levels of consciousness so that humans can perceive beyond the physical reality by identifying with the frequency of the cat's intelligence. This is why many people who were termed wizards and witches who had sensitivity to other realities often had cats around as what you call familiars, because it enhanced, in a sense, as a permission slip device, their ability to perceive into other dimensions more clearly in the manner that the cats were doing. It is very rare that you will see the idea of people that are referred to as witches and wizards having a dog around, although there are some exceptions in certain cultures. But the dog, therefore, is more the idea of an internal reflection of self, to give you an idea of what it is you may be processing, that the animal is reflecting to you, whereas the cat is encouraging you to see beyond the physical reality and connect to your higher self and other dimensional aspects of your being.
You mentioned that cats can carry burdens for their owners, and I was wondering if dogs also do this and what we can do to release our burdens with and letting them know they don't have to do that for us.
Well, again, this is to some degree what I just explained. The dog in particular will reflect the different things going on that you may be experiencing in relation to fear-based belief systems within you that require processing. But the processing, once you have your attention drawn to the fact that a fear-based belief exists or that something needs to be looked at within yourself because of the reflection that the dog gave you, then it's simply about what we've already said. Going into what your belief system is, finding, digging up as a dog would, the buried belief system as a dog would dig for a bone, and allowing yourself to hear what that belief system is telling you, to really identify it and see that it makes no sense so that you can let it go.
Okay, thank you. Is the timeline for the pandemic still the same as you mentioned before, basically lasting approximately until July, August timing?
To some degree, but that's only the idea of the first phase. We sense at this time that there may be a second phase, and that is something that we can deal with at another time. For right now, you're still going through the passage of the eye of the needle, and that includes the entire first phase of the idea of the pandemic. So it's a time again to investigate yourself and let go of those things that don't serve you so you can come out the other side of the first phase, out the other side of the eye of the needle passageway, in a better position to deal with anything that might happen after that, whether it be a second phase of the pandemic or whether it be other issues that are going on in your society. As you can see, many other issues are coming out in the light of what's going on with the self-investigation that is being reflected by your entire society about what things you would prefer to change so that you can have a society that is more in alignment with what you prefer it to be.
Thank you. What is the root cause of racism, and how can we heal our racial issues?
Well, the root cause, once again, is a fear-based belief in the idea of disconnection. In other words, as you have fear-based beliefs that allow you to have an experience of disconnection from your power, disconnection from your source, not that you actually can be disconnected, but the fear-based belief can create an experience as if you are disconnected, then you feel disempowered. Feeling disempowered and disconnected doesn't allow you to understand the holistic perspective of how you are connected to everyone, how everyone is a reflection of you. And so by being in that denial that you are connected to everyone and everything else, you then see and perceive from the fear-based perspective that other things that you feel unconnected to are foreign to you, alien to you, dangerous to you. In other words, the fear-based belief kicks you into survival mode so that when you perceive anything that you then perceive as different from yourself in a disconnected way, you will usually react with fear, with the idea that you need to protect yourself, with the idea that you might be harmed, and all the things that go along with the fear of being disconnected from your own self-empowerment.
Thank you.
Yes.
When will the majority of the parallel Earths be splitting off? And when will the train tracks be too far apart to switch? And what is the time frame as to when this will be completed and we won't perceive the non-preferred realities through a glass wall anymore?
All right. Now, first of all, the splitting will continue for quite some time. The idea of the train tracks being so far apart you can't switch is a little bit of a misunderstanding. You can always switch if you realize you can. What we were simply saying is that if you allow yourself to be on a train that is really vibrationally incompatible with who you prefer to be, you may give yourself an experience of not knowing that you can switch anymore, which is different from the understanding that you can switch, but you have convinced yourself by eliminating that idea from your consciousness that switching is possible. So being more precise, it's not that you can't switch anymore, it's that you don't know you can switch beyond a certain point. Overall, as we sense the progress of the splitting prism now and the diversification of the tracks, you're looking generally, not that certain things can't be experienced a little bit sooner by certain individuals or groups, but since you've asked the question in an overall sense for your entire society, you're kind of looking at a period of time that lasts until about the idea of 2050. Beyond that point, it is going to be far less likely that you will experience anything that has to do with a reality that is vibrationally incompatible with the one that you prefer to experience. So it's going to be based on individual timelines, small group timelines, larger collective timelines, as to how individuals or small groups or larger collectives will allow themselves to have that experience. It's not that everything will happen at once for everyone, but there will be different rates of progression and different experiences as it builds up to a collective experience.
Great.
Yes.
I prefer a reality without toxic 5G, mandatory vaccinations, chipping, etc.
Yes.
Do I manifest that reality by making my voice heard, by going to protests, writing politicians, the media, etc., or focusing on living on a healthy and peaceful planet where these things do not exist?
Well, Nania, as you have sensed, the answer is actually this and that. It's both. The idea being that you stay in a positive state in order to navigate yourself more accurately to the reality you prefer. But remember, action is the language of physical reality. So you actually have to take actions that are also positive in nature, done in a positive way, that are representative of the kind of things that you, as a person in a new reality, would be compelled to do, to speak your voice, to make yourself known as best as you can. The actions are crucial because then you're actually behaving as if you're in the new reality in a way. I know that sometimes that can seem contradictory because you might say in your mind, well, the new reality wouldn't have any reason for me to take actions on those things because those things wouldn't exist in that reality. And that's true. But until you're actually fully in that reality, you have to demonstrate, no pun intended, the idea of that vibration to act as an example for others as to what that energy looks like in the reality you're in right now. So the idea is take the actions that seem to draw you in a positive way, not out of fear, not negatively, not in opposition, but simply being a example for others as to the kind of energy, the kind of actions, the kind of conviction and commitment that goes along with the reality you prefer, while at the same time following the formula, acting on your passions, staying in a positive state no matter what happens, so that you can continue to navigate yourself energetically in the direction of the reality that you prefer. So again, simply put, the answer is both.
Okay, great. It's becoming clearer to me that I'm connected with people who support negative belief systems, and some of those are against my belief systems.
Yes.
Will I have to let go of these people in order to follow my excitement fully, and will my connection to these individuals hold me back?
No one can hold you back unless you agree to be held back, which means you're holding yourself back. So yes, it might be necessary for you to create what appear to be detachments from people who are not vibrationally compatible with you. It's not always necessary, but the point is if you're asking the question, it's probably what you would rather do. What you would prefer to do is simply not interact with people who don't vibrationally align and harmonize with what you prefer in your life. So, generally speaking, yes. Because otherwise you're agreeing to remain in a vibration sometimes, not in all cases, but sometimes, where you then perpetuate the belief within yourself that they can affect you, when the truth is you're simply choosing to affect yourself by staying in those relationships.
Okay. I know a lot of people asked about Hansel and Gretel, and we don't have time to go into Hansel and Gretel right now. But we are going to shift over to another topic having to do with following your excitement and the things that go along with that.
Yes.
Van Gogh is known as someone who followed his highest excitement and yet did not achieve the recognition for his art during his lifetime. What part of the follow your excitement formula did he not fulfill?
Well, there was a lot of self-loathing in that, but there's also a misunderstanding and an assumption in the question itself that's being asked, because the idea assumes that he had to experience a classical sense of success when that wasn't necessarily his purpose. So the idea is to back off of the insistence and assumption that even though he was following what appeared to be his passion, he wasn't necessarily fully involved in that, though he may have expressed it at times. But he may have flip-flopped back and forth between the idea of his passion and the idea of fear-based beliefs of self-loathing, lack of worth, undeservability. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that if he followed his passion, he would necessarily have to demonstrate success in the way most people on your planet think he should have. That's an assumption and a presumption that that would actually be necessary on his particular path, which it didn't really have to be.
I know, that's interesting, because it's as long as you're experiencing the state when you're doing the art, whether or not it turns out to be recognized during your lifetime is
not the point.
It's not relevant, really.
Not always. It might be relevant in some cases, but the idea, again, is to remember that we've always said that you have to act on your passion for its own sake, not because of what you think it's going to get you. And the idea that it had to get him recognized in his lifetime is one of those assumptions, that it had to happen that way if he was in his passion. No, not necessarily, because you don't understand what his full path necessarily was, what the reason was he existed at that time, who was affected by him in a variety of ways. So you don't necessarily have to assume that he needed to be recognized just because he might have been following his passion.
So to release fear-based beliefs once they're conscious, how do we do that effectively?
All right. Well, as we have said, once they're conscious, once you recognize the fear-based belief is there, it's very important to pay attention clearly to what it's saying to you. Really listen to what it's saying to you. And when you compare what it's saying to you to what you see in what you call the outer world, in other words, what you see other people doing that they're capable of doing in terms of following their joy, you will realize, if you pay attention, that there is a great contrast between what the negative belief is saying to you and what you're seeing that other people are capable of doing. And if you are seeing other people capable of doing things that are similar to what you would prefer to do, then that means because you can see them, you could use them as models and you can do something similar to what they're doing. You can follow your passion too, like they may be doing. So when you take the idea of what the negative belief is saying and you compare it to what you see other people of doing, which means you can do that too, suddenly what the negative belief is saying to you will make no sense, will be illogical, because you will realize that it doesn't have to be true, that what the negative belief is saying is not really a fact, because obviously it's not a fact for those people. So why should it be a fact for you? That suddenly renders it into nothing more than a perspective, an opinion, a belief. And as soon as you understand it's a nonsensical belief because it doesn't have to be true, that it's not really a fact, it's gone. Because you don't hold on to things that don't make sense. If you do keep holding on to it, that means you have another belief that is reinforcing that one to make it make sense. This is what we call a self-sustaining belief system cluster. In many cases, it's not just a single belief that you're dealing with. It might be two, it might be three, that are, in a sense, in a relationship with one another in a particular way, so that if you are about to let go of one belief, one of the other negative beliefs will do something to make you sway away from letting that belief go, will convince you that you shouldn't do it. So that's why we always say, if you're still doing what you don't prefer to do, dig deeper. There's another negative fear-based belief that is making you think you shouldn't let go of the first one that you discovered. Sometimes you have to work with a cluster of beliefs that are reinforcing one another in a particular way so that working together, you won't let any one of them go. You have to be clever enough to know what that system is like, how it's structured, how they reinforce themselves by understanding that clusters exist. And therefore, you'll be able to see through the idea that if you're about to let go of one, you might suddenly feel that another belief in the cluster will make it seem as if there's a reason to not let that one go.
So they reinforce each other to the point where you're afraid to move forward, you're afraid to let
go. Yes.
And so, and you know, the more intense the fear gets, that the closer you are to actually letting go of the fear.
Yes, because as soon as you are really close to letting go of that fear-based belief, the fear-based beliefs will work even harder to ensure that you don't let it go. And one of the tools they have at their disposal is the amplification of the fear that they're already generating within you to not move forward. So the fact that you might actually become even more afraid of letting it go is actually a positive sign that you're getting really close to letting it go and making the fear-based belief work that much harder to convince you not to let it go. If you understand that, you'll be able to push through the fear and it will be gone.
So when you're in a positive state and you start having all kinds of wonderful positive synchronicities,
yes,
and suddenly out of nowhere a negative situation occurs from what appeared to be a positive synchronistic experience.
Yes.
How do you understand what's happening and how do you properly respond to that?
Well, you have to remember one of the tools in the kit of passion, in the kit of excitement, is the reflective mirror. The reflective mirror, as you are experiencing your excitement, if anything is within you still that is representative of a fear-based belief, it's going to come up Because that's what the reflective mirror does, is bring your attention to something that's out of alignment with all of the joy and the positive energy that you're experiencing, so that you can find out what that is, so that you can bring it into the forefront of your consciousness, so that you can allow it to become nonsensical, so that you can let it go and add its energy to your excitement. Because if you're not made aware of the fact that even though you're acting on your excitement, you may still unconsciously be harboring something that is not in alignment with your excitement. If you're not made aware of that, then you can't let it go. So the idea, again, is to remember this state of being is, as you are experiencing your excitement and suddenly something comes up that seems to interrupt it, you have to remember that what's happening is your attention is being focused on something you don't prefer, so that you can let it go. And the fact that it came up is part of your excitement, not an interruption in it. In other words, don't define it as an interruption. Define it as an opportunity to create more excitement by letting go of the beliefs that won't allow you to experience excitement as fully as you could. So discovering something that's not part of your excitement is part of your excitement.
And so would you say that whenever a person experiences emotional pain, that's representative of the idea that they have strayed mm-hmm. from being their true self, and that they are believing something that is not accurate in terms of their true self, and the pain is to warn you that you have strayed from being?
It's a guiding mechanism. As we have said over and over many times throughout these transmissions, pain is the result of resistance to the natural self, to the true self. So pain is your guiding mechanism to let you know when you have strayed vibrationally far away from your true self, so that you can go back to your true self and then relieve the pain.
So when people are in darkness and they feel a lot of pain and they don't know where the light is.
The light is always within. The light is always within the examination and paying attention to the idea that you're holding on to fear-based beliefs. That's where the light gets turned on, is that you remember that and that you investigate that and bring the fear-based belief into the light of your conscious mind, so that you have something to work with.
And so when you're truly yourself, your true self, and you let go of the negative beliefs that are bringing you pain, then you experience an entirely new reality, don't you?
Of course. Now, you're experiencing an entirely new reality every moment anyway, but you may be recreating the continuity of believing that you have to remain in a state of being that gives you pain. So again, it's not so much that you actually are doing something new by shifting into a new reality. It's that you are awakening to the fact that you always have been, and finally taking advantage of that fact by really redefining who you are and letting yourself discover what the belief systems are within you that may not allow you to break that continuity.
Okay, well, that's very helpful. Thank you so much for all the information and all the sharing.
It is our passion and our pleasure. And now, please, by all means, enjoy the meditation that will follow. And now, allow yourselves, in going forward with your meditation, to become comfortable, at ease, breathing gently, softly, and being kind to yourselves, being gentle with yourselves. And whatever music you wish to add, whatever images you wish to add, allow yourself to go with the flow, and know that you are being given an opportunity to tell yourself a new story about who you are. An opportunity to recognize the symbols in the story that you present to yourself, about yourself,
and to more clearly understand and discern what it represents in terms of your positive and negative beliefs within you. So that you don't necessarily have to assume what others might assume a particular story might mean, that you have the ability to give meaning to all the elements of your story, so that you don't fall asleep into victimhood, so that you don't have a life of stasis, but that you allow yourself to choose, no matter whether your experiences are what you prefer or not, choose the ability to always investigate what is creating what you're experiencing within your belief system, and always be able to identify it in the story that you're telling yourself, so that you really can write the story that you prefer to live, the story that you prefer to give, to share with others, of who you are, truly who you are, and spin things into gold, and free yourself to live the life of joy, freedom, power, happiness, creativity, and love that really are the essential vibrations of your inner being, your true core self, your signature vibration. Don't fall asleep. Don't slumber your life away. Act. Investigate. Discover. You will only discover more of yourself in the unknown. You will always find the answers if you seek them out, but you will not find them if you don't. Allow yourself to awaken in your story and be the true protagonist of your story, always taking action, always driving the story forward. Don't allow someone to come along and do it for you. Rescue yourselves by identifying those things that hold you back, that you believe hold you back, because it is only your belief that is doing so. Free yourself in your story. See the book, see the fairy tale that can be true. For all fairy tales, whether they be literal or not, always represent a deep truth within your reality and represent a way you can choose to live. So as you see yourself opening that book and reading any fairy tale, any story that you are going to absorb or experience as a part of your life, you get to write what those symbols mean, what those characters mean when they say what they say, and how you can form relationships to them. Relationships with your belief systems, which is what those characters represent. And allow yourself to know them, to see them clearly, to discern for yourselves which are really representative of positive and negative ideas. Do not be swayed by what some of the collective consciousness stories may tell you those stories should mean, those symbols should represent. Write your own story. Give them your own meanings. Write your own tales. Because as we have said before, and will say now, and will probably say again, what your society has long considered to be nothing more than fairy tales is actually the way life works when you allow it to. It's magical. It's transformative. Spin your straw into gold. Do not slumber and do not worry. You will find the answers. You will identify the elements that you need to identify that will free you from your fear-based beliefs. And you will not have to give up the precious bond with the child of your being in order to experience the freedom that you deserve to experience in your life. Write those stories. See yourself penning them on paper in a blank book. It is your story, your tale, your magical journey, your process of discovery and profound insight. Allow yourself to live that story, to live in the pages of that book, to illustrate it for yourself in the way that works for you, from your imaginational connection to your higher mind, and allow your higher mind to guide you in that tale. For it will always guide you true. Guide you to more of yourself. Guide you to discover treasures that were heretofore buried and invisible to you, if you are willing to dig more deeply into the treasure chest that you are, and discover the gold that lies within, instead of allowing the brambles to grow up around your castle by slumbering for 100 years. Allow yourself to find your way through and awaken of your own right. Awaken yourselves. Awaken your power. Be alert. Pay attention. Listen to what you're saying and ask yourself if that's what you want to convince yourself is true, or whether you would rather pay attention to a different story than some of the thoughts and sayings that have passed through your lips and your mind in the past. Gather yourselves together and spin yourselves into a golden version of your being that shines forth as a living example to others, so that others may also write their own stories and live their own fairy tales of truth, so that together you can all, side by side, create a new library of books that extends to the heavens, of tales of truth, joy, love, of action, of valor, of creativity, of boldness, stories of power, stories of love, true love, not the false love of someone to rescue you, but the true love of knowing that all of the rescuing can be done within yourself. Awaken in those stories. Breathe them in and let them live within you. As you move through life, as you create your life, as you live your life, as you are your life. Breathe it in and exhale like the fiery dragon to burn away the brambles that confine and limit you to living your fullest truth. And inhale the sweet scent of the flowers in the garden that replace the brambles and grow beautiful and bright in the sun. And drink in the beautiful rain and feel the beautiful breeze that carries you on your journey as you tell yourself the new story that is the story of the true you, and then truly live happily ever after. Breathe it in, breathe it out. Drift and dream and go with your flow, because your flow knows exactly where you need to go. With a fresh, clean page and a fresh ink pen to begin to lay down the first letter of the story of the rest of your life from this day forward. And just begin to write. And then live what you've written. Be at peace, our unconditional love to you all, and we thank you with deep appreciation for sharing our story with us. Together we create a new story for all. Be at peace and welcome home. Good day.